The adversary is water. It's going to kind of flow through cracks and find how to penetrate the enterprise. They're not going to stop, okay, just because we have AI or whatever. I think the analogy can be carried further to say that water is going to flow into the Mississippi. They're going to start looking more like regular users.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast. Every Friday, Lima Charlie hosts Defender Fridays, a 30-minute live fireside chat hosted by our founder, Maxime Lamothe-Brossard, who sits down with an industry expert and hands-on practitioner for an unfiltered conversation on a topic related to cybersecurity defense. These chats are so insightful, it made sense to share them on the podcast as well, 1 week after they originally aired. If you'd like to join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. And a reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations where everything is built API first. You can think of it as a backend for your MSSP that enables you to scale with confidence as your business grows. You can get started today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
Welcome everybody to Defender Fridays. Really happy to see a pretty decent turnout. I know it's also sort of a holiday, depending where you are in the world and all that. So usual pitch, right? We get to talk to all kinds of interesting people in the industry about all different aspects of the cybersecurity and defensive cybersecurity. So we like to bring them in and have a chat about something that they're passionate about. This is not a slideshow, so hopefully it's a good conversation. Please do chime in. And again, following that recipe, we have Joshua Neal with us today. Super happy to have you. Do you want to maybe give a quick intro to those folks that don't know you?
Yeah, thanks. And it's a real joy to be on the call with you guys today. I love Lima Charlie and Max and Chris. So hello. I'm Josh. I'm a statistician, but please don't hold that against me. I've been in threat detection for 25 years. I was at Los Alamos National Laboratory and Microsoft and various other things. I now have a startup called Alpha Level.
Awesome. Anytime I hear statistician, I think of that old Simpsons joke about the astronauts. There's a mathematician, a different kind of mathematician, and a statistician.
Yeah.
I love it. awesome. So, I mean, I suspect I kind of have a good idea of what's on your mind, because I know we've had kind of like parts of that conversation before. But it just keeps being more and more and more relevant. So I don't think, this is going to go away anyway. So go for it.
Yeah. I wanted to try to say something big to you guys on this call. So I thought about that. And so if you give me 5 minutes, I'll say my piece and then, we can open it up. So I think the advent of AI and security operations is going to squeeze the adversary into more noisy channels. There's my big statement. And now I'll expand on what I mean. Vulnerability, the identification of vulnerabilities. It's a pretty good use case for large language models. They're language models, after all, and analysis of code and both binary code and programming language code is a sweet spot. I think this is going to accelerate the identification of vulnerabilities, and I think that is one of the slowest aspects of patching processes. We might wonder, because I'm going to say a few things about adversaries and how this accelerates adversaries. I think that it does accelerate adversaries in identifying vulnerabilities. But I think there is an asymmetric advantage for defenders for once, in that we have a lot of machinery, once we know a vulnerability is there, to go get patches done. I think another challenge there is prioritization of patching, because that's an expensive process, and there's some great companies out there that are working on prioritization. But in general, I think we're going to start taking, well, we're going to get better at finding vulnerabilities and patching them. That reduces the effectiveness of malware as an initial penetration vector. And CrowdStrike put out a thing last year that now 79% of alerts they're generating are not from malware, up from, I think it was in the 40s the year before. So we're seeing an acceleration of non-malware based attacks. An example of the adversary, we're removing a channel that the adversary can operate in. I'm going to give some more examples of that. So again, the thesis is we're going to squeeze the adversary into noisier channels. That's my thesis. Okay. Detection engineering. And I'm seeing some great content out of Lima Charlie. There's a little plug for that in the automation of generating new detection rules. Makes sense. It's a language. Okay, language models. Thumbs up. So now we're going to have more rules and more coverage over attacks that can be encoded with a rule. I'm going to now say something a little bit salacious, perhaps. I'm trying to be a little bit salacious in that I think it's a bad idea to use LLMs to tune detectors. In fact, I think tuning detectors is a bad idea altogether. What? Okay, fight me.
Now
Okay,
that's a hot take. Go on.
here we go. So why? Because tuning is about introducing exceptions in the detection logic. This is an artifact of the fact that rule-based detectors are statically defined at detector definition time, when the context for whether something's bad or good is only available at alert time. By putting exceptions, this is like regular IT stuff, or don't alert when Max runs PowerShell out of a weird directory or something like that. These are all holes in the detection logic that adversaries can slip through. And so I think it's a synthetic part of the fact that we're deploying rule-based detections to try to put in exceptions statically when the real information is only available dynamically at the time of the alert. You got to go, this is why we have human analysts in the first place, is they go and look at what else happened. Okay, so I think the automatic generation of exceptions in detection logic is a bad idea, but the automatic generation of detectors with that is encoding threat in a rule is a good idea. Okay. Now I'll talk about alert triage, and I'm almost done, you guys. Thank you for listening. Alert triage. Okay. My mind is blown. I hate to admit it, but it's amazing. Okay, Claude to triage alerts is fantastic. And I'd probably be mad at myself if I was a year ago for saying this, but I was pretty convinced it was a bad idea. Here's why I still think it's a bad idea. It's expensive. And I'm convinced that without trying to put a sales pitch on, that there are cheaper methods to identify a large majority of benign positives than running everything through an LLM. All alerts go through the LLM. I think for the most ambiguous alerts that require context, an LLM makes sense. Oh, well, an agent. Okay, I should say an agent that is able to go and grab that context to identify whether something is benign or true, should be the end of a pipeline of sophisticated algorithms, which you can kind of think of as context preparation for the LLM. So I am a proponent of alert triage LLMs agents for alert triage, but only for the most ambiguous things. First, for cost reasons. We're seeing, this is anecdotal, but what I've heard is that these AI SOCs can get down to about $2 an alert. At the very high, and it might be, somebody else might have some better intelligence on that. But you gotta, these guys have to make money, and the margins have to be there for them. For 80% of alerts, I think you can do it for pennies on the dollar instead of $2. So there's a sort of statement about cost. More generally, I think that the next generation of AI SOC, if you will be a set of algorithms, alerts, telemetry, anomalies, and things in which there's filtering out of non-malicious stuff at every step, and then a careful preparation of the context that you give to the LLM and the agent, which is controlled both to not go down rabbit holes and burn a bunch of tokens, but also don't give it spurious things that it will make false conclusions on. You might call this hallucinations. The right preparation, a lot of work to prepare what you give the agent is actually where we need to put a lot of effort in the future. Okay, now I'll make a conclusion, which is as all of these things come about, in order to sort of take care of the rule-based detections, the malware things, what we're really doing is forcing the adversary into a noisier channel. My partner Mike said, water is going to, the adversary is water. It's going to kind of flow through cracks and find how to penetrate the enterprise. They're not going to stop, okay, just because we have AI or whatever. I think the analogy can be carried further to say that water is going to flow into the Mississippi, or for the Europeans out there, a big river. Okay, in that they're going to start looking more like regular users. The adversary is going to have to fit into the things that we can't define with static rules, that we can't block with malware, with AV and malware defenses. That, and I'm going to show my age here. So at Los Alamos, we built our own firewall. There wasn't any firewall. We couldn't buy a firewall. This was like 2000, right? And we had this big argument about whether we should close down every port except port 80 on outbound, like force everybody into web. And the less sophisticated of us, I should say, sort of said, well, that will limit the adversary's comms channels for external comms. No, they just fit into web. And now we've forced them into a noisy channel of regular web behavior. I think the net effect of all of this machinery that we're putting in place to sort of commoditize or put on steroids the development of new rules, the blocking of malware, et cetera, is really going to lead to them being more behavioral and fitting in more with human behaviors that are harder to detect with static queries and rules and things. Thank you for coming to my TED talk.
That was awesome. So many different topics to get into, rabbit holes, hours of discussion, right? But I mean, I think you're like my take, right? Like, is you're generally correct, but I think there's a lot of this is a continuum. Like just starting on like the detection engineering, right? You're talking about context, and I think you're right. But there's context is a thing in classical detection engineering as well, right? I'll give you a super basic example. If I generate DNS events and I want to say, hey, anything 3322.org is like evil, And all my event contains is like, you know, the name of the box, where it's coming from, and the domain. I don't have a lot of context. And so, you know, it's difficult. Now you kind of layer in, you know, maybe it's the process doing this, right? So from an EDR perspective, but you could conceptually kind of blow that concept up and say, yeah, and I'm also going to put into that same event, you know, the last 100 processes on that box. And I'm going to take, you know, the last 10 users to log into that box and take their history and put that in that event. And so to me, the detection engineering, whether you're talking about like classical detection engineering or all the way to LLMs, is a continuum. And the biggest differentiation is ultimately the deterministic aspect of it, right? Like if I have an EDR alert, a classical EDR alert, it's it's an exact deterministic thing. If I take LLM, it's the other end of the spectrum where it's not deterministic at all. There's kind of like machine learning statistical stuff in the middle where it's deterministic, just a lot harder to determine kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
My take.
Yeah.
And to me, what indicates where and how you want to hit on that spectrum is economics.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one end is cheap, the other one's super expensive. I think I'm going to go with a hot take here. I see Dash's comment. I think to touch on the other aspect of what you talked about, which was the attackers, like the impact on attackers, less and less malware. I think that's going to happen, but not because of vulnerability finding. I think that's going to happen from OS hardening. Right. If I'm talking iOS, everybody's on iOS, malware is gone. Right. Like, except for very, very thin, you know, like nation states that are able to pull it off. So I think it's a different thing. And when I get into, okay, you know, I feel like this week it's been in the zeitgeist a lot, right? The speed and finding vulnerabilities with AI and all that. I buy that there's going to be a lot more vulnerabilities found through AI. I think it's going to take a while for this to directly translate into easy exploitability.
Yeah.
Because finding an overflow is quote unquote easy. Don't kill me. Like, I know it's really hard, but conceptually, right? Making the thing crash, crafting the heap so that you reliably exploit it and get the right execution in memory against all of the memory defenses and like all of that, all the way to like, I have, you know, kernel mode or user mode, like malware access is really, really hard. But I think the biggest impact is going to be, and I'm getting to Dash's comment here, which is in my mind, the biggest impact is, actually a mirror impact that we're seeing on the defensive side where, you know, okay, the thing that's obvious in my mind you don't want to do today is throw your raw data in an LLM, right? That's burning money. That's like makes no sense. But the orchestration of the defensive thing, that's where the LLM really starts to shine. It is expensive, but you connect the dots and then, you know, let's say in a year, stuff is moving so fast. In a year, my suspicion, my thesis is that the models are going to be better than 95% of security analysts. They might be expensive, but if you compare that, it's not an added cost, right? But like eventually this becomes a shift into, well, you know, I don't need a huge stable of like, you know, L1s looking at every alert. I really need really sophisticated people to go at, you know, at the end of the process. Then the economics, I would say, probably start to make sense. Now, it depends on the environment, right? Like, are you getting 5,000 alerts a minute? In which case, your problem is not a problem of triage. Like it's a detection engineering problem, an offline problem. And the mirror part of that for the attackers is I think the attackers are going to be able to start to come in and go from a stage zero, foothold and into owning the entire company in minutes or hours because of the orchestration, purely at the orchestration level of going, you know, I landed the box, where's the DC? The DC's here. Okay, what user, this user has access, go. Yep. Right, which traditionally would have taken like an operator sitting there and kind of like figuring stuff out. So if that's the case, I think we need to be much closer to I won't say fully autonomous, but like 90% autonomous SOC.
Yeah.
If only to be able to respond to this as fast as it happens.
Yeah, I agree. And boy, as you said, a whole bunch. So if I may respond, I'm going to cherry pick and really cherry pick the last thing because I have a low attention span. So I'm going to claim credit. There's a, you go on the web and you can find a talk I gave at the Alan Turing Institute in 2016 or thereabouts, in which I said that's coming. Why are we why is the adversary having humans decide what to do next as part of a kill chain? You can write algorithms to make decisions here and speed everything up. Now it may make wrong decisions. I think that's part of why it hasn't been done yet, is that they get caught. If they put in these automated methods, they're going to get nailed because the methods aren't very good. And LLMs, because what we're seeing with the investigative capabilities of an agentic system, it's so powerful that I think that's the flip side of that is, having an agent decide what to do next in the process of executing an attack is viable. I think that's going to be coming. And I predicted it like 10 years ago. Why not? Why aren't we getting there now? So then maybe we can imagine that this whole discussion about alerts, like we stop having that discussion. Like for the last 20 years, we've been piling on alerts and people and how good is the alert and all the detection engineering. What we're actually doing now is starting to think about how do we prepare the right context to turn an agent loose on the data. And I've always found alerts, the term alert, to be fairly arbitrary. There's telemetry, there's electrons. Do we call those alerts? Do we call telemetry alerts as a lock? At some point, there's a human that writes a rule, and now we have an alert, and that's sort of arbitrary, and that's all to try to feed a human the right context to make a decision, whether it's a human or an LLM or an agent. The whole goal of threat detection has been to prepare for decision making. Pull the signal out of the noise with low false positives and give that to some decision-making code. And so we're not doing anything new in terms of that preparation. Where I do draw the line is that, yeah, you're right. Like LLMs aren't the right tool for pulling the signal out of the noise. They're the right tool for pivoting through the data and doing an investigation, I think. And don't believe me, a guy with a PhD in 25 years, just ask an LLM, should I use you for anomaly detection from raw telemetry? Ask that question. It will say no, use machine learning and statistical methods and use me for context and investigation sort of things. So if I, in my rambling commentary, would say, what the new world we're finding ourselves in is prepare is doing a lot, still doing a lot of work to prepare context such that some entity, whether it's an LLM or a human, can efficiently run that down. And then we can stop talking about alerts. I don't want to talk about alerts anymore. They're ridiculous. It's a ridiculous sort of artifact of anyway, I may be insulting people now. So,
No, I mean, I think you have I think that I understand the spirit. Practically speaking, I think there's a need for, if you're not going to go and create context for every piece of telemetry, then you need some basic selector to say, I need to create context around what's going on here. And so in my mind, that's where the alert kind of comes in. And I saw a really interesting comment. So like, you know, what about RAG, right? For triage and like around context. And I'm curious to get your thought here. My take is that RAGs are interesting when you're looking at, you know, fetching from finding specific documents that relate to a very language-based problem. But they're not really the right solution in at least, honestly, I think the short term for cybersecurity. I think candidly, we have the right solution for that already, right? Which is querying. You know, if you've got a data lake and you know, it can write an SQL query to go and query and find the right thing. So I think you kind of bubble up the context question to now making sure that the agent understands the company's context, right? Or the organization's context, like what data is available, how things relate to each other. And so it's not context about the alert, it's context about like the slightly bigger scope so that it knows that, you know, if I'm looking for context around this, you know, Office 365 user, well, it's mapped into Okta, into this other thing, and it knows to go and do that.
Yeah, I think we're on a similar page. I think I would add skills in the Anthropic sort of lifestyle to RAGs as sort of a, I don't care about the mechanism by which we inform an agent, but rather there's a priori knowledge that we want to help the LLM, the agent, operate on. And so if it's a RAG or a skill, we want to encode that a priori knowledge. In addition, and this gets back to sort of exceptions and detection logic, you know, those are all about the normal IT stuff, right? So telling an agent what's okay, what is the established behaviors, and, you know, this admin logs into that machine all the time and it's fine and stuff, just gives additional context to the agent in order to go find the stuff that's not okay. And so, you know, I think that more important concept there is rather than thinking there are things that we know statically about an enterprise that could be encoded in an exception, in a detection rule, or in a RAG or a skill or whatever. There's static stuff that we know, and then there's dynamic stuff, and the agent needs both. And there are different methods for sort of preparing that context, you know, and not all of it is an LLM. A lot of what we prepare for the agent is that was really rare. And how do we get that statement? It's from statistical models. They say we quantified what's normal and here's something that's very rare. That's context for the LLM that it couldn't get without us, you know.
Dash, it sounds like you wanted to come in, or Adrian, if you want to defend your hot take.
I have a little bit here I want to throw in. I think that one of the big things that a lot of people are just now discovering, sadly, is how important clear instruction is on how to do things. A lot of us in cybersecurity are autodidacts, so we didn't come from, all of us, an academic background. We all have weird learning styles and patterns, but the one thing we all have in common is that we're all good at learning. But one thing that LLMs are good at is deciphering instructions that are clearly stated. So as we get better about standardizing like literal curriculum for what this job role needs to know to be able to do their job, and the more we're able to condense that training, especially such that it can fit within the tool usage restrictions and attention limits, as well as overall context window for full sessions. But a lot of people throw instructions and even skills at LLMs that are too big for them to read in one pass, and they don't even know that. Like a lot of people don't realize that no matter what frontier model you're using right now, in one look, it will not consume more than 16,000 characters, period. So if you want it to read something that's bigger than that, it has to take more looks at it than you expect. And those looks don't look the way a human reads a document. They read the file front and back inward. So they read it from the edges in. And like that just fundamentally changes like how they actually process the information, because they're actually getting your intro and your closers first before they get the meat of the material. And that influences the way that they learn it. So we're going to have a revolution in the way that we train and teach newbies, as well as then train and teach agents, so that we can actually get them operating the way that we hope that they would, by instructing them in a way that they can actually understand and metabolize.
Great take. Agreed.
Totally agree. Yeah. I see AI, it's like first contact with AI. If you're a Star Trek fan, first contact with a new civilization, people think differently a little bit, and you need to figure out the right way to, you know, message things. And like, Adrian, sounds like you got something.
Well, I don't know if we're out of time, but I can try and make it quick. So yeah, my generally, I think most approaches I've seen to detections is kind of, and security in general is kind of insane, because it's kind of like, okay, let's buy a bunch of tools, let's see what they can do, and let's start turning things on. Whereas I think we should be coming, like that's kind of backwards, right? You know, like we should be looking at how other companies fail, how attackers are getting in, where they're having success, and kind of work backwards from that, reverse engineer the offense's success and turn that into our defenses. So I'd much rather have, like, you know, here's the top five things attackers do every single time. They got to do it every single time. It happens every single time. And you should never, ever, ever miss it. You know, these are what I call the red flags. Like, make sure you're just super good at those. You'll never, ever miss it. You catch it every single time when you practice it. And you do need the ability to practice it. Every time you build a detection, you got to run attacks against it. You got to make sure it works, first of all, and works well, right? You know, without producing a bunch of noise. And I would much rather have those five than to have like 300, you know, that like the idea anybody's getting hundreds or even thousands of alerts a day on a day that they're not getting hacked, that's just madness. That's insane.
Yes. Yes, indeed. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. We are towards
imagine
the end
your here. Doctor told you you had cancer 100 times a day, every day.
Right? You had to pay somebody else to decipher whether or not that was an actual statement of cancer.
Right.
Or you're a man and you're pregnant.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. Sorry. No.
It's the first time for everything.
Yeah. Well, that was a great chat. Thanks, Josh, for coming in. Everybody participated everywhere. That was super interesting. Josh, if folks want to get in touch with you, is there a best way to do that?
Yeah, find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way. I'm happy to connect and take DMs and whatever. You can go to our webpage at alphalevel.ai if you want to see the marketing material. But I'm happy to chat with anybody. So.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We will see everybody next week, next Defender Fridays.
Thanks, guys.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend. Subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/Defender-Fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake, with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.